Hello and welcome to today's Everton Fans Forum podcast. This is following the meeting on Tuesday, the 22nd, so the 24th of June. It's myself, Dave Witcherly. I'm joined today by Fans Forum Chair, Jas Ball.
Hi, David. How you doing, mate?
Good, mate. Look forward for this conversation. And also Tony Sampson, Vice Chair on Everton Fans Forum.
Hi, gents. Good to catch up with you.
So we'll be discussing, as we always do, that monthly update of when we, obviously there's a lot of work that goes on in between these meetings, but when we meet up with the club once a month, obviously there's a variety of issues that we continually raise, issues that come up within the month, issues that we've been working on for some time, and we like to give a bit of a flavour for that. Obviously, since the last meeting, we have completed the recruitment for this year. For our new members, big congratulations to Siobhan Dornan, Andrew Vernon, Rose Sannan, Barry Phillips, Stan Affleck, and Chris Holsall that were all successful as part of that recruitment and that were voted on by the fan base. So a huge welcome to them. This was actually their first meeting. And yeah, we started this meeting, of course, with an introduction by our chair, who's obviously on his second term as chair. And I'll just hand it to yourself, Jazz, if you want to add a few words about that.
Yeah, cheers, David. So as you just said, then you just listed our new members. It's great to have them on board, and that they really do have a sort of broad range of experiences. So they should hopefully ensure that we continue to make progress from the last year as well. Obviously, as we had an extra attendee in terms of the club reps this month. So Rich Kenyon actually attended this one as well. And he sort of threw down the challenge to the forum to make sure that we do keep challenging the club. That's sort of music to our ears, and certainly the new forum members as well. So hopefully we can sort of do that justice. In terms of the project groups as well, we've had a slight change in terms of the project groups that we ran last year. So we've merged a couple of them together. So we've merged communications and events together into a sort of engagement group. I'm going to sort of continue to chair that group. But then we've got international. So Tony's going to carry on chairing that one. So no change to that group. We're merging atmosphere and catering into a matchday experience group. And David, you're obviously going to be the lead on that one. And then we've got retail. Anne-Marie is going to be the lead for that. And then we've got a new one, which is the staging move. So that's also going to encompass the Goods and Legacy project, as well as Bramley Moor Dock. And then Siobhan Doran's going to be the lead for that as well.
Fantastic. It was good to see Richard there as well, and obviously laying down that challenge to continually keep pushing the club, and keep working with the club to try and improve things to the best it can be. So that was good to see. Obviously, the first topic that was actually discussed on the actual last meeting, apart from merging the groups, and just for anyone that may have not listened to one of these podcasts before, basically the forum have got, a wider group as such, but there are project groups, and that's what we were talking about there. So they're like the longer term issues that we come together. Obviously, most forum members, have got their own expertise, the different areas where they can really add to. So they obviously volunteer to get involved in them particular topics that they feel like they can contribute to, and work, and they continue to work on them over a longer term basis. So just as a bit of a flavour for how they work, obviously that does feed into the wider forum, but these groups meet regularly in between meetings as well, and that obviously that work goes on and is ongoing throughout the month. Tony, there was the first update that we actually had was in relation to season tickets, and I think it's fair to say there has been a few issues, hasn't there, from what we've seen online, but it was good to see. I think there was mention about last season's refunds as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All the refund process for last season is that's all done and dusted now, and I think that's gone relatively smoothly. I think from the feedback that we've had, certainly direct from from supporters and others, I think that the club's sort of learned from that and has managed that process quite smoothly. So that's all done and dusted. But yeah, as you say, since the club announced the period for season ticket renewals, we'd had a couple of things that come our way. That have been raised by a number of different supporters that we'd looked into and rose and raised with the club. One of those was actually about some of the credit charges. So And a few people had had experiences where they'd been buying multiple season tickets, you know, for their family or for their family and friends, and they'd had a credit charge applied for each of those tickets, even though it was all done under one transaction. So something that we raised with the club to see if they could look into that and ensure that there was only one sort of, you know, credit card charge that was applied, you know, per transaction rather than for each of the, you know, individual season tickets. So that's something that they've agreed to pick up and take forward. So hopefully that's avoided in the future.
Tony, just one on that as well, mate. So yeah, so there's also one very similar issue to that where it wouldn't let people buy multiple tickets for the same sort of household, if you like, the same sort of family group, friends and family group on the account. So that was also getting looked at the club as well to make sure that only one transaction does go against them as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and David, I think you'd had a query about people sort of phoning in to raise queries and not being able to get through to the Everton Fan Services helpline.
Yeah. Those are basically online. I've obviously brought up the club that, you know, a couple were really unhappy. You know, some of them, I think that first deadline actually fell on a bank holiday Monday. So, you know, it wasn't really the best date for it to probably fall on, really. But I think, you know, even in the week that was leading up to that, there were fans that were nearly 2 hours on the phone trying to get in touch with the club. Obviously, you know, I know the club are working incredibly hard, you know, at the moment, especially with the changes with coronavirus and having to work from home and you know, that kind of working situation that you do have. So that's fair. But, you know, I think from a customer service element, 2 hours is just not good enough. You know, you can't have fans holding on trying to get in touch to actually take proactive action to give them club money effectively. So yeah, that, you know, that was raised there from a customer service point of view, and they did take that on board. Obviously that feedback. Again, I think that was at the back of probably the underlying issues that the two you two gents have just mentioned about not being able to properly effectively do it online. So there's a bit of work that's obviously ongoing as part of that.
Yeah, I think also as well, it's part of the, it's on the back of part of the work that we did as well. So originally, there's only going to be one cutoff, wasn't it, in July for the seven month option. So I think the feedback we gave the club to increase that to 8 and 9 month options is sort of fell in line with those dates. And obviously, yeah, as you said, the deadline being on a bank holiday wasn't ideal.
And there was a mention as well there that there's no auto renewal this year. So I think that's important, isn't it, for fans to be aware of. And obviously in relation to the cup scheme as well this season, so you will have to go on purchase them yourself. But the club have ensured that they are going to come out with them update as well, just to remind fans. The one that gets me, I mean, I know we've mentioned this there, is the premium credits. You know, I do think they do charge quite a heavy rate, you know. So I know this year that the club basically were working off short time scales. Obviously, with that, you know, there wasn't that kind of security as to what next season would look like. Obviously, I think there's announcements since come out that it is looking towards full attendances. But you know, with the club having to delay their kind of decision in relation to season tickets, that they have renewed that agreement premium credits. Obviously, they're offering the 7, 8, and 9 month options this year. But I have challenged them to try and do better next year. You know, for me, any way that we can make sure that there's more money in the fans' pockets rather than, you know, a third-party company, we've got to keep pushing on. So the club have ensured us that next year, you know, they will take that time to make sure that the premium credits are the best option. And if they're not, they will look for a better option out there, because I think it is an important issue that we keep pushing on, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's something you've raised previously as well. So again, I think the circumstances are slightly different, but yeah, I think you're right. I think that commitment to do, you know, like a full tender, you know, at the end of the season, to make sure that there's a range of options that are explored, so it is the best for, you know, for people, and as you say, so that, you know, we're making the right savings where they can, or the club's making the right savings where they can, is going to be important. So yeah, we'll have to make sure that we keep the pressure on that one.
And there was the mention about the card charges, about the you know, there was this option this year, obviously, for the digital cards or the physical cards. I don't know if you want to give us a quick update on that, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that generated quite a lot of comment, didn't it? We raised all of that. We weren't aware that the charge was actually being was going to be made. So, you know, it was also a little bit of a surprise to us. But I think as has been explained, you know, I think that, you know, the club is trying to use this as an incentive to, you know, adopt a greener approach to, you know, and reduce the carbon footprint. So I think, you know, they gave us a little story about the fact that the cards that are produced at the moment for all season ticket members would stretch from Goodison Park to Bramley Moor Dock, you know, if they're laid end to end. So they obviously have retained the option to have the card. And I think that I think actually 2/3 of people have actually opted to go for the digital option. You know, while some have gone for both as well, but we'll only be able to use one or the other. So if you use the card on one occasion, then that will mean, you know, you've got to use the card for the rest of the season. You're not going to be able to switch in between, in between both. But yeah, the club was keen to point out that, you know, as I say, this was done for environmental reasons and nothing else. So you know, we'll see how the system works this season.
Definitely, you know, it's going to be interesting. One of the things that we were keen to raise as well is how that will work. You know, there were a lot of people a bit, as we know, that, you know, the connection isn't the best around Goodison, but the club did assure us that these cards will work offline. So it doesn't have to be connected to the internet as such, your phone. It can be stored on the phone and it can be scanned on your way in. But, you know, there could be issues at the back of this. But, you know, we'll just keep working with the club. You know, if we do spot any trends or anything coming up, then we'll make sure you flag it to the fans forum, and we will raise that with the club straight away. Like any new procedure that comes in, there's, you know, it's, we're not naive enough not to think that there's never issues, you know, teething issues. But we'll get there. We'll keep working with the club and get that communications from the fans directly to the club. Another issue that came up that I wanted to raise, really, I did raise this with the club quite early on about, you know, about communication. Obviously, I think it caught everyone by surprise that the fans and the club, Carlo Ancelotti was leaving the club. I did think that engagement's everything. You know, I particularly like front foot communications. And, you know, I did say to the club that I didn't think it was particularly the best in terms of when Carlo left. You know, they didn't really set out what the fans were to expect. You know, would like to see something from Marcel Brands. And they did push back, you know, and I mentioned that, you know, other clubs have done, you know, operated in a similar way, which is fair. But, you know, I think that communication's incredibly important, you know, especially in these situations. And it did seem to generate a lot of mixed messaging in the media, you know, people reporting different stories, whether they were true, whether they weren't. And obviously, you know, this certainly last 3 or 4 weeks has been quite a bit of a stressful time, really, for the fan base. You know, they felt a bit, you know, I think it's fair to say they felt a bit confused, you know, what the whole situation and what's going on. So I just asked them, you know, to try and keep them communications with the fan base as clear as they can, you know, to show leadership and just to keep us updated as and when there are meaningful updates. So it was fair to say, you know, they did listen to that as well. So it's, you know, it's just important that we continually raise everything that does get voiced to us online, which we do. So there was also a mention about the kits as well. Obviously,
David, can I mention one point there on the Thomas piece as well? So they were keen to get out there that they will never communicate while talks are in progress. Now I can understand that, why, because otherwise salaries could go up and there could be sort of commercial arrangements with that. But I think it's just keen to sort of get that out there that the club didn't speak to any media or anyone else, basically saying who the managers were or whatever else. So even though there was a lot of speculation across sorts of social media and sorts of printed media as well, that didn't come from the club.
Yeah, no, definitely. You did reiterate that. No, it's a fair point that was made. Cheers for that, Jazz. So there was mentioned earlier, obviously, right, the 21-22 kits as well. It's obviously this time of year where we're all desperate to get, you know, these insights, all these fan concept kits jump up. Some of them are fantastic. Some of them aren't so much. But yeah, no, there's obviously keen to find out when the kits are out. I think any blue out there, you've got, you know, little kiddies and stuff are desperate to get into the new kits. So obviously we're told that the home kit is expected sometime mid-July. So hopefully we're getting closer to getting our eyes on that. And the fair kit that is expected towards the end of July. So there's a couple of exciting weeks ahead as we get these kits coming out. I think I'll be wasting a fortune again next year as I did this year. Well, training tops and everything else, because I did notice today, lads, I don't know if you've seen any of the club pictures that have come out today. The physio staff were wearing like a pale blue top. Must have been like a training top. I can only assume that that's something that's going to be released with the home kit, but I had my eyes on that as well. I don't know if you've seen it, Jazz or Tony, you see any of the club come?
So I was trying to zoom in on them, to be honest, because I saw a lot of the white training gear that got released with the away shirt, didn't it? You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I'm just trying to do a sneaky zoom in myself.
I know. There's as much speculation about what the new kits are going to be like as to who we're going to be signing, isn't it? It's like the silly season.
Yeah, no, it's always an exciting time of year. I think there was a mention as well about the other kit that's been released already. As there was a bit of disappointment that there was a leak as part of that. Obviously, you know, certain people do get to see the kit slightly earlier. You know, obviously for that kind of feedback process to happen. But that is embargoed. You know, it's important that when some of this information does come out as such for the purposes of engagement and for the purposes of gaining feedback or insight, that it's not leaked out there. But I think we all know everything social media, at the best of times, things get out there, don't they? And they're hard to control at times. But there we go.
David, just maybe just a good time to mention the conversation we had about retail as well. Now we're talking about kits. Obviously something we've been raising continually, certainly since we've been on the forum and before that as well, just in terms of the general availability and visibility and making sure that everybody can actually physically get their hands on the kits, you know, before the season starts and once they're, put up for sale. So I think it's like an annual complaint, isn't it, from Evertonians, wherever they are, whether that's in the city or in other parts of the world. So we raised that again. And as I say, this is one of those issues that you highlighted earlier, that we've consistently and continually raised with the club about improving this so that people can get their hands on the kits at the right time. And they have given us the commitment that they've been working over the course of the last 12 to 18 months to try and improve, the distribution concepts with their retail partners in Fanatics and Hummel. I think COVID has had some implications on the speed at which they would have liked to have advanced those conversations, but they gave us a reassurance that things are going to be improved. There's going to be some news on that hopefully in the course of the next couple of weeks. And just from an international perspective, I think that's also going to have an implication for being able to access kits in different markets around the world. Particularly North America for one. I think there's going to be some advancements in terms of making things available in store. So that's music to my ears. So when I walk into a sports shop out here, I don't just see the other team and United and Spurs and even Leicester. Hopefully now we'll be able to see having kits in store as well. So that's good. And then just a shout out as well for, I know that the Irish Toffees and our fans in Ireland have been pressing really strongly to increase the presence in the retail stores in Ireland. And again, I think there's been some progress on that. So hopefully that will improve, the availability for certainly for our overseas supporters. So, let's see how that evolves. And it'd just be nice, wouldn't it, to have a new kit launch and hopefully have the number of complaints about not being able to access it reduced.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You've been obviously on the forum for a year longer than us, Jazz. So I think it's fair to say you've seen this issue, haven't you? And you've continually been on the forum for a couple of years now with this issue being pushed all the time. And it's not one that's going away. So hopefully we're starting to get some resolution on that.
Yeah, exactly. So we mentioned a while ago to me, I think it's a fair while ago, that we were pretty much having regular discussions with Nick Humphries, who sort of heads that department up, about getting the in-store availability to a place where it needs to be. And by the sounds of it, it's going to be steps forward anyway, which is good to see.
Definitely. These kits have got to be available for our global fan base, and certainly, our devoted supporters over in Ireland as well, and right across the world, they want to buy these things. So let's get them in the store and let the fans buy them. Obviously, I think you're starting to get excited at this current time, aren't you, Tony, with the Florida tour on the horizon. I think there were a couple of bits of talk on the meeting about that as well, wasn't there?
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. Excitement's really building out here. I think you know, it's been an issue that's been discussed for a long time, isn't it? About the length of time it's been since Everton have been out in North America. So I think it came as a little bit of a welcome surprise. Actually, we know that the clubs we tried to get out here last year, but obviously the pandemic prevented that. So yeah, it was a nice welcome surprise when we learned that they're going to be joining the Florida Cup tournament from the 25th to the 28th of July in Orlando. So yeah, that's caused a massive buzz out here. There are going to be some restrictions. So I think, you know, the club's only permitted to take part in it as long as it observes sort of quite strict sort of restrictions on, you know, operating bubbles and that sort of thing. So I think there will be some limitations on what it can and what it can't do, but you know, they're obviously all sensible ones. But I know that the club is actively working now with a group of Everton supporter club leads in planning a whole series of events for the 4 or 5 days that the event is on. And there's some really exciting stuff being planned even with those restrictions. So I think that more detail about that will start to come out over the course of the next few days. But it's actually great to see some of the ideas being generated from the supporters clubs themselves and the club sort of working with them and being prepared to listen to that and support and help and advise on that as well. So there's many calls happening at the moment between the club and the supporter groups to make that reality. And it's just going to be great to, you know, obviously none of us have been able to see Everton, or a very small number have been able to see Everton live over the course of the last 18 months or so. So getting that chance to do that out here is going to be absolutely brilliant. So yeah, a real buzz, and we'll see how it all pans out. You never know, it might be the new manager's first bit of silverware.
let's hope so, mate. Got your fingers crossed. But you're quite right there. You know, it's you know, really good to see the fan engagement team have done some really, really good work, haven't they? Working alongside yourself and the, you know, the fan groups out there, and it's a great example of how good engagement works. And working alongside fans to, you know, to get that end result.
It is. And it's can I just actually, let while we're on as well, I just want to give a special shout out to Laura Shields and Andrew Hicks from the Everton Orlando supporters group, because they are going above and beyond to, you know, do research and support and look at opportunities. And Laura sent me a jokey WhatsApp the other day to say that Andrew's taking it on almost as his full-time job now. So it's great that they're, you know, they're showing that dedication and commitment to making it a success. So yeah, all looking forward to it.
Thank you. So I think it's fair to say, you know, that being certainly between the recruitment, you know, all the work that you've been doing out there as well, on top of that, Tony, and what we're going to come on to now, which is, you know, in terms of the fan-led review, I think we've been incredibly busy. I think it's fair to say you were joking there about the supporters there almost making it a full-time job. I think you know, the amount of hours that we've been putting in behind the scenes has been something else at the moment. So it's... you know, it is a voluntary role. This is, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's been on the fans forum, but, you know, you can be rest assured that we are working hard. We're putting in the hours, you know, to best represent you as a fan base and to really, you know, get your voice out there to the club and to improve things. So in relation to the fan-led review, we are obviously going to come on to a recording, which I'll let Jazz introduce this topic and give you a bit more of an explanation behind the scenes before we talk about what the recording's about.
Cool, cheers. I just want to go back quickly to the sort of pre-season tournaments as well. So there's obviously going to be a number of pre-season UK matches as well. Obviously, the Man United one's been announced for the things last weekend before the season starts. But there's potential of a couple others as well. Now, I don't believe that they're going to be sort of full first-team games at all, and by the sounds of it as well, it's not very likely that they're going to be at Goodison, but that there still may be an opportunity there for sort of a couple more domestic friendlies as well prior to the season kicking off. I think we're just waiting on a bit of clarity as well about the Man U one, because if sort of restrictions keep moving in the way that the talks are going at the minute, there may be an opportunity for some away fans to get to that match as well. Go on, Mike, sorry.
I bet there'll be some buzzing here and that, you know, I'd certainly, you know, some of the away crowd are desperate to get back out there now, aren't they, and engage and mix at these games. So hopefully some excitement bubble in there, and that just come off, because it'd be great to see, wouldn't it? All the Evertonians back on the road following Everton. So,
yeah, absolutely. In terms of the fan-led review, then, so obviously I'm assuming most of the fan base are aware of what happened with the European Super League and what have you. But then on the back of that, the government are basically fan-led review that's going to be sort of, it's been ongoing for the last couple of months now, and I think that sort of the ultimate aim is getting an interim report out in, it was originally July, with the final report in October. So we did quite a lot of sort of engagement with a lot of different sorts of Everton stakeholders. I don't want to go sort of too sort of in depth now, because as you mentioned, David, the presentation that we delivered to Denise is now going to be, we've now got the audio file of it, and it's going to be bolted on to the end of this podcast. But it'll certainly give a feeling of some of the engagement activities we've done. It's broken down to three areas. So areas that directly fall in line with the fan-led review. The second area is then in terms of the club looking at the way it does business and things that are within their control to change. And then the last bit of that is a sort of summary of other feedback that not necessarily fed into either of those first two categories, but it was highlighted to us anyway. So we're just keen to get that information out as well to any fans listening to this pod.
Fantastic. Cheers for that, Jazz. This obviously... you would have seen a lot of the communications in relation to the work that we did through, you know, the workshops, all the emails that were sent to you, Jazz. I think your inbox was inundated at one stage, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of work that's gone into this. And obviously this was then presented to Denise directly on Tuesday, 22nd of June. Obviously that was recorded, so you'll get to hear all the information that was passed to us, passed directly to Denise, and obviously gain the insights from that. And do you want to just give a bit of a flavour for what else is being actually sent out with this podcast, so people understand what it all relates to and links in with?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously we've had sort of 300 or over 300 emails direct from individual fans, but then we did a series of workshops as well. So these were with sort of formed groups who have an affiliation to Everton, if you like. So we did workshops with the Everton Shareholders Association, Everton Disabled Sports Association, Everton Heritage Society. We had one workshop for sort of groups who are members of the, or associate members of the Football Sports Association. And then we looked at sort of groups that represented the fan base as well. So we did the Sports Club Committee, which is the sort of the domestic fan supporters, the domestic supporters club voice. And then we did sort of three workshops catering for different time zones to capture international feeling as well. So we did one for sort of North America, we did one for Europe, and then we did one for sort of the Asia Pacific region as well. So as you say, we cast the net pretty wide to try and make sure that we did represent the global sort of Everton opinion in terms of this. And then obviously, as you said, then so we're going to we presented this to Denise, all the feedback that we received, and then going to be a sort of follow up action now as well. So Denise sort of challenged us to do a bit more work on the back of that. So hopefully we'll be going out to the same sort of stakeholders in the very short term to sort of build on this in terms of how some of these ideas that were mentioned can be sort of driven to fruition.
Fantastic. Cheers for that. The updates there, Jazz. Tony, if you got anything to add to that?
No, pass over to... just one quick thing as well was, one thing that came from that conversation that was really reassuring was obviously the fan-led review is going to make a series of recommendations, I think, over the summer at some point through an interim report, and then later on in the year it'll produce its final report. But very clearly from the conversation that we had at that meeting on the 22nd was, we don't have to wait for that. If there's things that we think could, should and can happen in relation to how Everton does things, then, it was pretty clear from the conversation that he's also shared this, that, we don't have to wait. We can crack on with that. So, as Jazz mentioned, bringing, this extensive group of stakeholders together again for this next phase now means that, we can now develop a proposal, particularly around sort of the issue of fan representation and what that means for Evertonians, develop that proposal and hopefully move quickly and take that back. And as Jazz said, see that come to fruition.
Fantastic. Cheers for that, Tony. And we're now going to pass you over to that recording without further ado anyway. Look forward to speaking to you soon. So over to you, Jazz, and your recording.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for giving up a little bit of time today so that you can sort of be privy to this presentation on the back of the activities that we have been doing over the last couple of months. I shall just be a bit of death by PowerPoint, I'm afraid, but I'll just put the presentation up.
And Jazz, I can see the presentation because it was in my meeting pack, so I do have the slides.
Okay, brilliant. I was going to say I can share them with you afterwards, and I'm quite happy to do that. But if you've got them now, that's perfect. So for those of you who don't know, I'm Jazz. I'm the current chair of the Everton Fans Forum, and I'm also joined by Tony, who's one of my vice chairs as well. In terms of the viewing audience as well, we've got members of several groups who've got links to Everton. We've got John Blaine from the Everton Shareholders Association. We've got Mark Dyer from EDSA. We've got Ken from the Everton Supporters Club Mid Cheshire, who was attending at the Supporters Club with the workshop. From the FSA associate members, we've got Dave Kelly from the Blue Union, and then also we've got representation. Brent Connolly from the Everton Heritage Society, and we've also got representation of from our international fan base as well, in terms of Helga, Bridget Bryson from America, and Yolanda as well. So welcome to everyone. In terms of the club personalities who were on the meeting as well, we've obviously heard from Denise, our CEO. We've also got Rich Kenyon, who's the Director of Marketing, Communications and International. We've got Scott McLeod, the Head of Communications and Engagement. We've got Mo Magazachi, who's the Senior Liaison and Engagement Manager. And we've also got Holly Tyra as well, who's the Club Insight Manager. So as you can see on the slide then, the presentation will follow the format of sort of the background to how we find ourselves here, engagement activities that we've carried out as the forum, feedback relating to the fan-led review, and then we've also got feedback relating to the internal club review that Everton will be looking to do as well. We've got a few examples of other feedback that's been gleaned during this process, and then we'll just go on to what happens next as well. So why have the Fans Forum been involved at all? In terms of the sort of the background since December, Denise has just given us a really sort of succinct background on that as well. So it's the very fact that this review is going to be centred on fans is the reason that we've been involved. So what did we do? Quite simply, we engaged with Evertonians to identify current fan sentiments. Primarily, this was in terms of changes to the sport that we love, but inevitably, this also gave fans an opportunity to raise topical and wider issues as well. So who are the stakeholders? In terms of stakeholders, I suppose you could break them into three sorts of different categories. Football fans of teams registered with the FA, although I'm mainly interested in the Evertonian voice. We've got Everton as our the football club we support in terms of doing due diligence for any changes they may wish to make internally, or suggestions that they may even take forward to the Premier League shareholders meetings as well. And lastly, we've got Tracy Crouch, who is the chair of the fan-led review as well. So when will this process be completed? I'll break this down into the sort of two of the stakeholders that I've just mentioned. Firstly, in terms of Everton's due diligence, on the back of this afternoon's presentation, the club will be sending out a survey to all fans who have registered email addresses with them and sort of tick the box to receive emails. And then on the back of this, the club will gain their own first-hand evidence and will then be in a position to look at whether changes are going to be made, recommendations to governance through the Premier League shareholder network, and any timelines related to either of these. Based on the original time frame of the interim report going out in July, we were hoping that this feedback would start to filter out to the attendees of this workshop and the fan base shortly after that. I imagine that may slip a little bit until August now. And in terms of the fan-led review, the interim report, obviously, as we've just been told, is now due in August, with the final report originally from October, now towards the end of the year. So in terms of the engagement activities that we've carried out to gain fan opinions and thoughts, these have been based around three areas. So the day after it was announced that Tracy Crouch would be chairing the accelerated government-sponsored fan-led review, I worked with the club about how the forum could be involved in getting these insights. And later that day, Denise emailed the fan base requesting any comments or thoughts to be emailed to myself. This was then followed up a few weeks later, with an email from myself, and in total we got over 315 email responses. As well as the emails, we've also chaired a series of workshops with established groups who have links to Everton. And as you can see on the slides here, so we've got the Shareholders Association, EDSA, Sports Club Committee, European supporters, FSA associate members, American supporters, and Asia Pacific supporters, and the Everton Heritage Society as well. In total, the reach of members from these workshops was slightly over 3,700. Granted, not all of them were able to attend, but then finally, we've also had conversations with our own personal networks, as well as comments and DMs through our own social channels. Anybody who has emailed me direct asking for a phone call, whatever, we've facilitated. So all in all, we've given the opportunity to over 4,000 Blues to contribute to this process. In terms of sharing information, we've done this in a few different ways. So we contributed to the FanEd review through the FSA's Premier League Network preparatory meeting on the 9th of June. On the back of this, we were requested to present one area direct to Tracy Crouch during the formal FanEd review presentation. And that area that we got asked to sort of talk about was to do with fan representation at board level. During the same meeting, there's other FSA, so Football Supporters Association reps, who were also speaking about fan engagement, cultural heritage, and independent regulation as well. And then following this presentation today, I'll be emailing a summary of all the related FanEd review feedback directed to Tracy Crouch with the panel for the FanEd review. I'll share that email address a bit later in case any of the sort of interested parties want to email any further comments as well. With respect to Everton then, so we had a fans forum meeting on the 29th of April, and it gave a few of the themes that had been brought to light on the back of the original email. And this same summary was then also shared to all attendees of the workshops that we hosted. I also had a meeting with Rich Kenyon on the 8th of June and disclosed the areas that, in my opinion, were within the club's power to change. This wasn't any level of detail. It was mainly the high-level themes, so that the work could start on shaping the survey that they'll be sending out to the entire fan base. And we will hopefully gain some insight on that a little bit later today. And then finally, today, once all the feedback gained through all of our engagement activities is actually presented to the forum, and I'm delighted that you're here to observe that as well. So, as I've already mentioned several times this afternoon, the FanEd review is being carried out by Tracy Crouch MP and will cover all clubs within the English pyramid system. The scope of the review is pretty tightly bound around 8 terms of reference, and I'll summarise the feedback that we around each term of reference over the next few slides. And as you'll see, some of them were a lot more interest to our fan base than others. The first term of reference then was to consider the multiple owners and directors tests and whether they are fit for purpose, including the addition of further criteria. So the feedback that we received for this term of reference was summarised around 2 points. That number one, the current tests are not fit for purpose, and examples were cited such as Wigan Athletic. So proper fit for purpose tests must be adopted and be carried out before any new individual or group is given permission to take significant shareholdings. And secondly, if a takeover or a release of new shares is to take place, equity ownership models should be considered, enabling fan organisations the opportunity to own their own club. It's accepted that this may not take place in the short term, but there would be potential future in which clubs could be owned by their own fan bases. The second term of reference then was to assess calls for the creation of a single independent football regulator to oversee the sports regulations and compliance and its relationship with the regulatory powers of the FA and other football bodies. So the intent by 6 clubs to break away to form the ESL, the European Super League, is a prime example of how the Premier League has proven that self-regulation has failed. Independent regulation is required with absolute separation from many of the current stakeholders, and this is a must to protect clubs' supporters. There are also discussions centred on whether this should be one regulatory body for the whole football pyramid or separate ones for the professional and the national games. So the professional game is the Premier League, Championship, Leagues 1 and 2, and then the national game beyond that. Legislation is required to provide a clear deterrent of any future breakaways, and future meaningful sanctions need to be published within the charter. the currently announced future sanctions of £25 million fine and a 30-point deduction are meaningless. Even if those sanctions had been applied this year, each club would have still received a minimum of £85 million based on the lower of the €100 to €200 million golden handshake, and they all would have stayed in the Premier League due to Fulham having 28 points. Independence should also ensure a consistent approach to punishments is followed without any undue favour towards specific clubs. Term of reference three was to examine the effectiveness of measures to improve club engagement with supporters, such as structured dialogue that were introduced on the back of the expert working group. So this was the area that received more interest than any others, specifically in terms of fan representation at board level. Our feedback told us that there is currently a high degree of confidence in the leadership of the club, as well as the board. And this is also externally validated through a Premier League fan survey from December 20 and the Grand Old Team website's post-season survey. All this being said, consensus was that there needs to be a system where boardrooms are not closed shops. And that there's also representation by a fan who is representative of the broader fan base and not on the payroll. This supporter director must have equal voting rights and will also ensure that the heritage is preserved while being mindful of the community which supports and has helped to grow the club. It was also questioned whether this should be more than one, as how can one supporter represent the fan base? Additionally, their roles will ensure that strategic and operational decisions take necessary note of supporter views and interests. So this should include the rights for supported representatives to approve or refuse significant decisions through a golden share for specific areas. So a few examples of this could be to avoid technical partners who may use overseas sweatshops to manufacture kit, or to stay away from sponsors who are betting companies. Another example would be the need to consult supporters on the competitions that the club intends to be a part of. So this European Super League debacle and the subsequent fan response to this provides a very real and current example. So the role and level of influence within the decision-making process also needs to be clear to provide a true voice. It was also mentioned that if non-disclosure agreements are used, it could be construed as a pointless exercise. There were a few themes that were mentioned during our research into how a supporter director would be identified. Firstly, most views were supportive of any process being independent of the club, but there were also comments suggesting that the club should be involved. Secondly, if it is to be an independent process, the individuals or group of fans that run this process need to be able to fairly represent the views of the full fan base. There were also talks about whether a trust, a cooperative of existing groups with ties to Everton, or a committee containing representatives from these existing groups should be used. The rep could then either rotate through the groups on a periodic basis or be based upon the agenda for the upcoming meeting and focus on who has the correct competences to attend. So if the correct competences are not currently held from within that pool, independent trustees could also be brought into the cooperative. The feedback that we've received about ensuring effective representation is that it is accepted that if the process was an open vote, there'd be a danger of this becoming a popularity contest with potential for the wrong person to get the role. So a few different ways that could be avoided include a filtering process to ensure that any supporter director has the correct competences, whether that's governance, whether that's financial or experience of communicating at the correct level, or a fan conference that could be held to stipulate the boundaries that should be set for all nominations. However, one area that was consistently mentioned was that the actual vote itself should be overseen by the Electoral Commission. In terms of the board meetings themselves, there were discussions around the format and whether they'd be all encompassing or separated into fan-related issues in other areas. And there were also lots of comments about recent positive fan engagements, specifically related to the stadium consultation process for our future move from Goodson Park. This supports the fact that the club has involved the fan base about key strategic and community decisions. Term of reference four then was to investigate ways that league administrators could better scrutinise finances on a regular basis. We didn't have too many comments directly against this term of reference, but the comments that we've received focused around the need for consistency of application of the profit and sustainability rules. The next term of reference then was to examine the flow of money through the football pyramid, including solidarity and parachute payments and broadcasting revenues. So as you can see here, the areas mentioned focus on TV revenue distribution, parachute payments, and incentives for community support. In terms of the TV money distribution, general consensus was that as it takes 20 teams to make the league, all teams should receive the same amount regardless of how many games are aired. This would also make it easier to take a slice from the total pot, which could then be used to distribute among the football pyramid, or even to increase positional prize money to reward on-field performance. It was also widely agreed that parachute payments should be removed, and they do not promote equality within leagues and within lower leagues, and almost reward teams for writing poor player contracts. If teams specified salaries related to the league that they're playing in, it could be argued that parachute payments wouldn't even be needed. This parachute pot of money then would then be used to bolster prize money for lower leagues, or even used to offset running costs for teams further down the pyramid. Finally, a range of incentives or benefits could be developed to encourage club investments into local communities and grassroots football. These incentives and benefits could even be scaled where initiatives or large-scale club projects benefit city or region-wide economies. And what was unanimously mentioned was that amendments to the current process are needed to enable fair distribution of resources across all levels of the football pyramid. Term of reference six then was to explore governance structures in other countries, including ownership models, and whether any aspects could be beneficially translated to the English league system. It was raised that there are current examples of how fan representation and decision-making takes place from football and American football that should be explored. The first one was the NFL parity model, where equal payments are made to teams for TV and NFL merchandise. And then they also have a draft process with the draft system as well. For Barcelona, their socios model requires members to pay an annual membership charge, assuming that you meet sort of the predefined eligibility requirements. And then you can vote in elections to select the president. And that's also a prerequisite to applying for season tickets as well. The FC Pinzgau model, which is another fan-owned club model in Austria. And then there's the Green Bay Packer model, where fans are able to vote on key elections to the board and the executive committee as well. Term reference seven looked at interventions to protect club identity, including geographical locations and historical features, such as the club badges. So this is slightly different to the points I mentioned during term reference three, which applied to board level practices. The areas mentioned during the emails and workshops for this TOR focused on specific issues that would fall to the fan base to directly vote for. So this included generating these areas that would be considered as protected rights, such as those mentioned in the term of reference itself, such as moving to a different town and city and the club badge, but also changing the team's name, changing the team's colours, or changing the stadium as well, while remaining within the same vicinity. Also, the 50+1 model was discussed and generally supported as a concept, and future surveys could consult on the categories or types of decision-making or veto powers. The final term of reference then was to examine the relationship between club interests, league systems, and their place within the overall football pyramid. So, as I just said, this was the final term of reference for the fan-led review, and the areas highlighted to us for this area were related to consideration of supporters. Consensus was that changes to match dates and kickoff times pay little consideration to the needs of match-going or even TV audiences, with an acknowledgement that this is just as relative to home fans as away fans. It was undecided whether this would only be achievable by having a Premier League-owned broadcast solution as opposed to the current system four bidders, I suppose. So in terms of summarising the top three most mentioned points relating to the fan-led review, here they are. So as well as being raised at all of the workshops, fan representation at board level was also the most mentioned comment from the emails received that related to the fan-led review. This is also independently mentioned in the Grandall team survey that I mentioned before, in which 81% of the 3,615 respondents asked for it as well. Five of the eight workshops that we had highlighted that the flow of money throughout the game needs addressing. By themselves, the grassroots support and redistribution of TV money were the third and fourth most mentioned emails. But if you add them together, as well as the removal of parachute payments, it is by far the most mentioned point relating to the fan-led review. And finally, the independent regulation. So to quote Tracy Crouch herself from an interview on an Athletic podcast, the genie is out of the bottle. Independent regulation is coming in one guise or another, and this was raised through a few emails, but also 5 of the 8 workshops that we held. And we concede that the form that this will take has still got to be determined, but is critical to ensure protection for supporters of all clubs, as well as a consistent approach to punishments is maintained. So all I've mentioned so far is directly related to the sort of strict terms of reference that the Van Ness Review is working to. As I mentioned earlier, there's also an element of due diligence that Everton will be doing as well. So I've given the club some initial feedback in terms of the themes that are within their control to change. But this afternoon is going to be the first time that they will hear the detail behind these themes as well. The reason for this is that from the outset, it has been clear that the club want to gather their own first-hand evidence prior to deciding whether any internal changes are necessary to be made. And the method that they're going to be using to find this out is through a survey. So in the interest of full disclosure, the areas that I mentioned to Rich Kenyon on the 8th of June were fan representation at board level, support to community and grassroots, fan engagement, and then a few wider issues in terms of tickets, boardroom minutes, merchandise, and public statements. So I've broken down the Everton feedback into a few different areas, which you'll see over the next few slides. In terms of fan engagement, we've got fan representation at board level. So I've covered the feedback that we received pretty comprehensively in the last section. However, I must also say that there were also some suggestions that included trust the people at the top, as well as feelings along the line of I'd like more consultation, but appreciate that this is a business. Another suggestion that was made to increase the level of engagement would be by building on existing meetings with members of the board also attending. So I'm aware that the Shareholders Association already have quarterly meetings with board members, and ourselves as the Fans Forum normally have board attendance once a year. So we actually mentioned this back in April's meeting, that another way to increase engagement would be for this to happen more regularly. Certainly in terms of the Fans Forum, if that was to happen once more, and in terms of the other sort of regular meetings of supporters club committee, etc., I suppose it'd be wrong of me to suggest how often that happens, and that'll be one for their group to decide themselves. During one of the meet workshops, it was raised that it would be good for representatives of the fan base to gain a full understanding of the surveys that the club intend to use. And this was the reason that I had the initial meeting with Rich on the 8th of June and his team a couple of weeks ago. It's due to this and the information that I briefed on the previous slide that we'll shortly see a bit more info about the survey later on today. The club has been commended for having dedicated points of contact for groups with protected characteristics, but there has also been an element of frustration when members of staff in the box office with specialist roles have moved on without this being communicated. It's also worth pointing out that following the European Super League statement, there was overwhelming support for Everton breaking their traditional stance of silence and coming out in such a strong manner before the Premier League shareholder meeting had even taken place. This next point isn't directly for the club, but it's certainly one for their awareness. The cooperative approach that the forum have taken to link in with other groups with ties to Everton has been seen as a positive. I've had several messages thanking me for involving their groups and hoping that this can continue as appropriate. So just from the sort of top of my head, a few examples of how this could work was in terms of future talks with our stage and project group that could involve all the groups that we've been engaging with during this process. If there's something to do with ticketing, potentially we could tie in with the Sports Club Committee and EDSA. If it's work to do with the quality and diversity, obviously EDSA are the ones who sort of the forefront of my mind for that one as well. And obviously anything relating to a link to heritage, it's sort of tailor-made for working with Everton Heritage Society as well. So the next theme that I'd like to mention is areas that may cause a barrier to access of football. So the availability of matchday tickets is an area that's being highlighted. We accept that while we're at Goodison with a high percentage of season ticket holders and the associated waiting list, that this is going to be difficult to get access on a walk-up basis, but it has been highlighted to us nonetheless. While obviously not an issue last season, there have been examples of fans profiteering by using the previous official resale partner StubHub for high-profile matches. In all fairness, we are aware that the club was working with StubHub to identify fans who may be in profiteering, and those individuals did receive a letter saying that the club is aware of what they've been doing. But we're also aware that fans can get or could get tickets through StubHub at less than face value. Obviously, that's not going to be raised to us as an issue if fans are getting cheaper tickets than what they would be on a walk-up basis. So one way fans get around this is by passing season tickets to friends and families. And while we all know that this doesn't comply with the terms and conditions, it's always going to happen. This was raised with us lately due to the additional £5 charge that will now be made to receive a physical season ticket. Also, fans who don't have smartphones, whether through cost, ability to use them, or personal choice, will also see this additional £5 charge as something that they're required to pay. So while we've discussed this at the last forum meeting, I just thought it also justifies capturing here due to the time frame in which it was brought to us. So some of the comments we received were, the cost of a digital-only ticket should have been reduced by £5 instead of a charge for the card. I can see both sides. It's commendable to support the environment, but a lot of fans have less money now due to the fallout of COVID. And also it shows a lack of an understanding to the impact of decisions. So there's a lot more feedback in the May fans forum meeting, and those minutes are up on the website now as well. Cost is another hurdle that's been consistently raised, and this is specifically in terms of tickets and merchandise. So I've touched on the ticketing issue just now, but although season ticket prices have been frozen for several years, I'm not sure if this is also translated to general admission tickets. Also, an area that could be considered is developing the price cap that's already in place for away tickets towards a league-wide price cap for home tickets. In terms of merchandise, replica kits need to be made more affordable. And while it's appreciated that the cost per wear may make them better value for money, the initial outlay is where this issue is felt. This also ties into peer pressure for kids to have badges or player names on the back of it, which also adds to the cost. So currently it's £5 charge for adding the Premier League badge, and then £15 as well for the numbers and names, whether that's a player one or their own name. Also tied into this is the cost to sell official items to the international markets, and the relative cost to return items from overseas as well, which has had examples of making a point in this exercise. In terms of the matchday experience then, two of the areas that were mentioned to us were safe standing and alcohol. While we accept that the changes to Goodison are going to be limited, it's been raised that other Premier League teams have been getting rail seated added over the last couple of seasons. If GT8 continues to be a singing section, is this something that can be considered? Again, I'm not looking for an answer to this today, but thought it falls within the matchday experience theme. We've also raised the potential of alcohol being available in view of the pitch about a year ago at a forum meeting, and it's also been raised through our work over the last couple of months. It is allowed in cricket, rugby and tennis, but not in the Premier League football. It's even been shown on broadcast of the Euros this week as well, or this last week. Maybe this is something that should be raised at Premier League shareholders meetings, especially if it will alleviate fans gathering on our tight concourses while COVID is still around. Another area that got raised to us during this process is disclosure. So specifically that legacy boardroom minutes should be made public after a period of time. There's a great history of these within the Everton collection, but that only goes up to a specific point in time. So an example was cited that donations to and from the club should really be made public as well. Finally, the last area within this section relates to community and grassroots support, such as when young players move clubs, professional clubs get some recompense, but the amateur club they originally played for don't get anything. And also that professional clubs should sponsor local facilities as well. Certainly there are examples of players donating and contributing to their original amateur clubs, but this seems to be down to the individual or publicity associated with it. Likewise, if Everton does directly or indirectly sponsor local facilities, I don't believe that the fan base is aware of this. So those were the areas that sort of fell directly fell directly to the club's sort of internal review. And then there's also a few other areas that neither fell within the fan-led review or in terms of the club's internal review as well. So I just summarised the ones that got a bit more traffic on here as well. punishment for the six. This now appears to be put to bed, but fans were calling for point deductions, full disclosure of events, European bans, fans and transfer bans. Removal of the coefficient that UEFA are looking to implement. Again, it's accepted that this is out of scope for the review and out of control for Everton, but it is being pushed through the FSA by their next higher level of organisation, which is Football Supporters Europe. Salary caps in terms of overall caps for clubs, for individual players, or even limiting the percentage of income that can be spent on wages. However, it was also raised during this process that that hasn't worked within rugby league. Quotas of home-based or specific age groups within playing squads. This was also developed during discussions, and it developed to say that if UEFA, unless this was implemented UEFA-wide, English clubs could struggle in UEFA competitions. The removal of or changes to VAR, as it is negatively affecting the in-stadium supporter experience, potentially moving towards an appeal system, and also that within competitions, VAR should either be used everywhere or not at all. I suppose there's a recent example of that when we went away to Millwall, where that wasn't subject to VAR, but the rest of the Premier League ones were. And finally, the fans forum recruitment process. So it's been mentioned that current forum members are not the right people to interview new applicants, and also that the final voting results should be declared as numbers of votes as opposed to percentages. What I will add on a sort of personal thought is that I feel that volunteering members of the forum have an intimate knowledge of how the forum works, as well as the required workloads, who are ideally suited to carrying out the interviews. And also with respect to the voting declaration, in my first meeting as chair last year, I put it to the vote whether numbers or percentages should be declared. And at the time, only two members voted for numbers. I will also be repeating this process at this meeting on Thursday, which is the first one for new members to attend as well. So what next? So the next direct action from the Fans Forum is to start sharing the feedback that we've received throughout this process so far, and that will start this week. This will also include areas that are left off the other feedback slide, as they only received one or two email mentions. In terms of the fan edge review, obviously the original intent was then to have the interim report in July and the final report in October, but obviously privy to that latest information we've got, them dates may slip slightly. But we have also presented as part of the FSA's Premier League network. And as I mentioned earlier, we will also be submitting that feedback this evening in line with the terms of reference that are presented to you all today as well. We've also offered the FSA any sort of, if they want to work with us any further going through this process as well. So if we hear back from them, we will also obviously contribute to that as well. What I would request from you all, though, is that if you have any further comments, that you can email them direct to footballgovernancereview@dcms.gov.uk. In terms of the club surveys, then, it's expected that they'll be emailed out by the end of the month. And once the window is closed and responses received, there'll be some sort of feedback. I don't believe this is expected to take place in terms of the feedback prior to the publication of the interim fan-led review report. That summarises what I had planned to talk about today in terms of the engagement activities that we have done as a forum, and also the three areas that fell within. So whether that's the fan-led review, helping to shape the surveys that the club will be doing, or sort of areas that were mentioned due to either being topical or areas of concern for the fan base that didn't directly fall within those two areas. And obviously we'll be picking them up as sort of business as usual for the forum.
I hope you found that interesting. Thank you very much for that, Jazz. And that was a direct recording from the meeting with Denise. There are further steps that will be happening over the next couple of days and the next couple of months. So we will communicate them out as and when they happen. Thank you for listening, and goodbye for now.